Today's episode of Absurdity is sponsored by The Haystack. The Haystack is a voice for young adults in the Seventh-day Adventist Church that produces articles, music reviews, videos, and more. To check them out, go to www.thehaystack.org. The Haystack. Life. Culture. Theology.
Hey guys, welcome to Absurdity. I'm really excited this week because I have two really awesome guests that, thanks to the power of the internet and the 21st century, I have been connected with all the way across, all the way across the world, I guess would be back where I am. So halfway across the world in New Zealand. So thank you, Josh and Jesse, for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Yo! No, it's good
to
be here.
I'm so excited for you guys. So, okay, so tell us about yourselves. Tell us, you know, I don't even know who to start with. So one of you go, then the other, I don't care. But tell us about yourselves. Where are you? What do you do? That kind of thing.
I'm the oldest, so I'll start first. Jesse, the wisdom in my hair. My name is Josh. I'm originally from Melbourne, Australia, and now living in Palmerston North, New Zealand, pastoring two churches here. One in Palmerston North, one in Masterton, neither of which I'd heard of before I'd moved here.
Yeah. And I'm Jesse. I am originally also from Australia. I grew up in a lot of places. I moved around a lot as a kid, but the main place where my parents now live is a tiny little town called Robertson in New South Wales, which is about an hour and a half south of Sydney. I'm also in Palmerston North here, pastoring a church called Mosaic Community Church, and I also am a chaplain for a primary school and a preschool on the side. So plenty to keep me busy.
So just so you know, there's this kind of new mega church coming up and coming called Mosaic, and I think it's in California. So fun getting confused with them. Yeah, up and coming, even though it's already kind of big at the moment. They've already released a worship album and everything. They're touring with Hillsong.
Yeah.
They're doing all the good stuff.
Yeah,
they're out there.
It's so weird because we are obviously super aware. Like I'm Josh and I are a big fan of Erwin McManus. I think Josh introduced me to Mosaic originally. But when I came here, there's actually another multi-site church in New Zealand called Mosaic. And when Mosaic first started here in Palmerston North, a lot of people apparently were really excited because they were like, oh, is Mosaic opening up in Palmy?
Oh, no.
And everybody's like, yes and no.
No, that's, oh, man, that's rough.
That's okay.
Man, that's like me being an Elevation Shadow.
And you call your church Elevation Seventh-day Adventist Church. That would be...
Yeah, no.
Missed opportunity.
Love it. So just so listeners know, we're doing a double header where I just recorded an episode for their podcast and they just and now we're recording. I almost said you guys just recorded one for mine, but that's what we're doing right now. It's happening this second. So you guys host a podcast. So talk to me about your podcast. What's it called? And explain that name and try to explain it before everyone stops listening to you because of what it's called.
Okay. I demand at least a minute before you get out your pitchforks. So we have a podcast called Burn the Haystack. And it's basically a little play on words because there's an expression that what's the fastest way to find a needle in a haystack? You burn the haystack. But also Adventists love their haystacks. And pretty much... our mission is to burn all the stuff that's gotten in the way of what we think could be the truest and best form of Adventism. And something like, you know, there's that thing where we go to a lunch and everybody's like, what are we having? We're having haystacks. Well, what happens if haystacks can't be on the menu? What do we have? What if you burn the haystack? Then what do we have instead? Then all of a sudden we have to reinvent, we have to rethink. So we are all about looking at our culture and our spiritual practices, and we redeem the best and burn the rest.
Yeah, we believe that, you know, beneath the surface of all the extraneous stuff in Adventism, there is just real pure form. And it's the same as, you know, when you polish up a diamond or you're polishing anything, you have to get past all the dirt and the muck and all the extraneous stuff. And beneath all the stuff, all the traditions, all the cultures, there is a pure, pure, beautiful form of Adventism, which is really, I think, timely for the world. And we both think that. And so Burn the Haystack is about trying to get down to that, to boil down what is the true essence of Adventism and why should people care?
But we both do still eat haystacks, okay?
Yes. That is true.
Yep.
We just grill them first. Okay, so for my non-Adventist listeners, just so they know, a haystack is basically a taco salad, but I get burned at the haystack for saying it's a taco salad, so it's not a taco salad. But it's not, wink, wink, a taco salad, wink, wink.
It's a Schrodinger's taco salad.
That's right. It both is and isn't one. But yeah, it's chips on the bottom, and you know what, I'm not going to go into the layers because everyone does it in a different order and everyone argues about what it is. All right. So it's just a big cultural identifier of Adventists and Adventist potlucks. So that's what it is. So, all right. So Burn the Haystack, how many episodes do you guys have?
At the time of this recording, we have released, episode, I'm pulling open my podcatching app,
27, I believe.
Hey.
Yeah, we might be up to 27 or 28. So we're just approaching 30. So we only just started this year. So as far as podcasting goes, we are pretty fresh. I heard you talk on your podcast recently, and something that I've heard as well, which is you don't really know what you're doing with podcasting until you hit 100. So we are a long way to go, but we're loving the ride so far.
Yep, we know about 25%.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. Mm. Yeah, we know 25% of what there is to know about podcasting.
yeah,
pretty much.
No, it's really cool to see other people kind of get onto the scene with podcasting. And, you know, when I started Absurdity 2 years ago, there was like no other Adventist podcast. There were a few and they weren't really active. And so it's really cool to kind of see that growing. I have another friend that just started one recently up in Michigan. Cool. So it kind of, and it's even, to me, you guys found me before I found you. Sorry about this. So I really appreciate you guys reaching out. I think it's awesome to be connected to you guys all the way across the world and to be able to talk about ministry. And it's interesting to me because Absurdity really talks about things that are not often talked about. And I think one of those things in American Adventism and in American Christianity is this idea of ethnocentrism, right? So Western Christianity and really every kind of culture of Christianity looks at other countries through the lens of its own country. And America is especially guilty of this because, I mean, we're the greatest country ever. Yay. Like it's one of those things where we look through other countries and other cultures through our lens, and we think everyone should be like us. And that's created significant problems on the world church stage. And so ethnocentrism has been a theme on this podcast before, but now I get to talk about it with two people who literally live in another country. And while there might be someone who listens to this and thinks like, oh, well, you know, Australia, New Zealand, and America, they're not that different. You know, they're still modernized countries. And well, I kind of want to jump into that and find out like what is different ministry-wise, culture-wise, between kind of American Adventism and New Zealand. I don't even what is it? I don't want to say like Aussie Adventism or Australian Adventism, but like what is it? New Zealander
Kiwi
Adventism
Kiwi.
Thank you.
South Pacific.
See, all right, so I'm coming from a place of total ignorance here. let me just start with this, right? So in America, you've got this big social justice kick right now, and I don't. Once again, I don't know how much our news kind of spreads out to the whole world, but. You know, how do you guys filter through all of the social justice stuff that's happening around the world, whether it's LGBTQ, whether it's, you know, racial stuff, systemic racism, any of that stuff? Like, is that a part of your daily conversation there? Is it something completely foreign and like that's America's problem? What's the culture there?
One thing I see happening, especially in Australia and New Zealand, is that a lot of what happens in America tends to trickle down to our context gradually. And sometimes it takes a lot of time. Sometimes it takes not too much time at all. In Australia is interesting. I'll speak for Australia first. Australia is by and large a non-religious country. You know, a lot of our obviously early founders came from a Judeo-Christian background because, you know, when Australia was founded in the 19th and early 20th century centenary, Christianity was just something that everybody had. Everybody was a Christian. If you were a Westerner, you were a Christian. But in the years coming along, Australia has shifted to being more and more progressive, liberal, and I would say non-religiously affiliated. And it comes out, I think, differently in different states. One of the things that Australians have, which is our state separation. So what might be true in Queensland might not be true in New South Wales. What might be true in Western Australia might not be true in Victoria. Queensland particularly has been a place where a lot of schools and universities have made a push towards gender inclusivity, towards abolishing religion, towards becoming more progressive and liberal in the way that we treat LGBTQ plus communities. Recently, the Australian government held a vote as to whether to legalize gay marriage. And it went through quite well. It was, I can't remember the exact statistics, but it was quite overwhelming. So that's something that has been happening here. It has been happening in Australia recently. New Zealand has had gay marriage legalized for quite a number of years now. I believe it's been 5 or 6 years since gay marriage has been legal here, and that was obviously met with quite a bit of debate on this side of the fence from Christians and such forth. There have been a few Christian leaders here in New Zealand who have copped quite a bit of flack for presenting a quote-unquote traditional viewpoint of marriage. There's one particular. New Zealand, probably one of the only, you could say, mega churches here in New Zealand, Destiny Church, headed up by Bishop Brian Tamaki, who got in a bit of hot water, I believe it was last year, for saying that the Christchurch earthquakes, which... Going back, what is it, four years now?
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure. It's a while back.
A couple years back, were the result of New Zealand's relaxation of its moral standard, its moral culture.
Yeah.
So,
and the earthquake in Christchurch, by the way, that was huge. Like, Christchurch is still rebuilding from it. It's still a complete mess.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy to me. That's the first I'm hearing of it.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about American ethnocentrism, America doesn't hear about world news, but the world hears about America's news.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's like, it's kind of ridiculous that this is it's probably, maybe it is common knowledge among Americans, but this is the first I've ever heard of this.
Right? Oh, wow. Yeah. That's all over.
However, the God's judgment preaching thing, like, that's standard.
Yeah.
That's standard. That's consistent. Yeah.
It's interesting, as you mentioned, you know, the rest of the world hearing about America's news, because you always know when a slow news day is here in New Zealand, because if nothing's happening in New Zealand, and New Zealand's a small country, you know, compared to the rest of the world, there's not a lot going on here by comparison. You'll first hear of Australian news, and then if there's nothing happening in Australia that's noteworthy, you'll hear all the American stuff.
Yeah. What's Trump said? Something random he said lately. Like, oh, that's kind of interesting.
Most of us probably hear American news anyway, but you can always tell when there's nothing happening here in New Zealand. Whereas I'm sure that is never a case in America. There's always something happening to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. See, I know nothing about New Zealand, like, other than zorbing is really a cool thing there, and bungee jumping is a really cool thing there. Like, I know nothing of New Zealand. And there's an entire subreddit dedicated to maps without New Zealand.
Yes.
Like,
so
like
true.
All the times that it's left off of maps. So it's just, to me, like, and if anyone tries to type that in, it's reddit.com/r/maps-without-NZ. So there you go. Enjoy that lovely... It's fairly active. Like, there's always new maps without New Zealand on them, which I think is hilarious.
Pretty depressing. And as well, even, I was talking to somebody recently who's been to a number of, like, gigs or, like, big concerts, like, big names that come over from all around the world, and they'll come to Auckland, to Wellington, and the amount of times they'll say, "We're so happy to be here in Auckland, Australia." And for a Kiwi, like, because, like, New Zealand has this sort of, like, little brother syndrome to Australia. For them,
yeah,
that is so heartbreaking.
Canada-America sort of.
Yeah, probably a similar sort of vibe.
Yeah, no, that would, I mean, it would kind of be like, I'm in South Carolina, it'd be like a someone coming to Charlotte, North Carolina, and saying, "I'm so glad to be in Charlotte, South Carolina." And you're like, no, that's not.
Yeah.
That's not where we are. That's, yeah. That's you are incorrect. Get off the stage. So that's okay. So there. Let me ask you this then: what is the kind of perception? Maybe even just your own perception. You're not necessarily your country's spokespersons. But you can be if you want. Apparently, the new hip thing is to just claim votes. What is your kind of perception of Adventism in America and what it's like to be an Adventist, or what is it the same? Do you just think nothing of us?
When I think, yeah. Okay, this is just my opinion. Yeah, just sharing.
Yeah, what do you think? Yeah, what do you think of us?
When I think of Adventism in America, there are two pictures that come to mind. The first is the Adventism that is trying to copy the mega churches, like trying to compete with your Stephen Furtick's and Andy Stanley's and Craig Rochelle's. That's one. That's a minority, though, I think. The other picture, the more impactful picture, is GC, what we see during session time, what we see during the America that I see on Hope Sabbath School. You know, that sort of America. The suit and tie, the nice, clean, polished PR Adventism, the this is where Adventism started sort of Adventism, which is all about historical reclamation, which is all about preservation of our cultural heritage.
Yep.
The Adventism that is not so concerned with, and this, again, this is just a perception about reaching the world for Jesus, but is perhaps a little bit more concerned with maintaining its image or trying to maintain its relevancy to the world stage, because it feels like it has to be the leader. It has to be the big brother and everybody else has to listen to it. That's my perception of Adventism. And again, it's my perception.
I can definitely see that. Like I don't disagree with you. What I find interesting here is that the closer you get to the cities, the more you're starting to see the kind of more contemporary style, and the more rural you get, the more you start to see the more conservative traditional style. And that's not true across the board, but it's kind of like you can just kind of expect that.
I think you can
kind of wherever
you can more or less expect that in Australia and New Zealand as well. I think that trend definitely persists here. Yeah. Do you have any? What do you think, Josh? I don't know. You're kind of like a little bit hesitant there.
Oh no, it's
because I'm putting you on blast, and most of my listeners are American.
You guys suck.
I'm just gonna get a bunch of hate.
Yeah.
Now.
Well, hey, any mail is good mail, right? I feel rude kind of saying it, but American Adventism does not come up on my radar very much. Do you know what I mean? Like I've never sat here and thought, what do I think of American Adventism? It's like, I'll just hear a little thing every now and then about something that's happened in the church in America. I'm like, huh, there you go. I know there is one thing that comes up.
Okay.
And that's, I keep hearing that it's really common in America to go out for like a big lunch on Sabbath and then pay for it by credit card, and it's okay because it's by credit card and it comes out on Tuesday or something. Apparently that's really common. I've never that does not happen in Australia or New Zealand.
No.
You get
caught the supermarket or a restaurant on Sabbath, you'd be crucified.
Yeah. Is it true?
This is the first time I'm hearing about
okay.
The maybe it's true somewhere. No, I mean, any credit purchases now are pretty much instant. But what I do see, the trend is that we prepay. Pay on Friday for the services you're going to get on Saturday. Oh. That's what I see that with Adventist catering, Adventist events catering, lunches. I see that with actual church members and pastors. However, going out to eat on Sabbath is pretty regular, actually. If you are in a city where you've got a fairly large church, happens mainly with larger churches, just drive by Olive Garden or like some other random restaurant and you'll probably see some Adventists that you were just sitting next to in church at a restaurant. Like that's kind of because the kind of justification is the community on Sabbath apparently somehow supersedes the not buying or selling on Sabbath. So, but it is culturally more normal here. And Adventism is kind of more assimilated into American culture, and as a and there's a lot of patriotism in Adventism in America. So, like, I don't know if you guys have this. Do you guys have, like, New Zealand flags in your sanctuaries?
No, never.
No. Yeah, see, we have American flags in a lot of sanctuaries, like, just sitting up there on the stage or on the platform. Like, you see, like, it's not everywhere, but it's in a lot of places. Like, you see just your identity as an American. Your identity as an American almost supersedes your identity as a Christian.
Yeah, wow.
And they're kind of one in the same. So as America loses its Christian identity, quote unquote, Adventists and Christians in general start to feel like they're losing their relevancy. And that's sad to me because I don't think we were called to be Americans. I think we were called to be Christians first. Our citizenship is in heaven, you know, all that good stuff from the Bible. Yeah, so that's neither here nor there. But yeah, patriotism in American culture, like it's so much more kind of hammered into us. From the get-go, and history is very whitewashed, and I mean that literally and figuratively.
That's so funny because we don't get that at all here, really. I mean, on January 26th or 25th is Australia Day. I think it's 26th. Australians will get patriotic, but the most patriotic your average Australian will get is barbecuing some lamb and playing some backyard cricket. That's about as Australian as you can get.
Triple J is hottest 100. Oh, they don't do it on Australia Day anymore. But
oh yeah,
Triple J is hottest 100. Like it's like a really popular Australian radio station, and they do this massive thing where all the listeners all around Australia would all vote, and they have this huge 100 countdown. And it's a huge tradition.
It was
in
a
Australia.
Landmark. Yeah,
yeah, it is. Everybody loves the hottest 100, wow. And then they'd release the album couple of months later.
That's as Australian as you can get, and as far as Kiwi culture is concerned, I think it's pretty similar.
You don't see like New Zealand flags at people's houses very much or anything. Like you don't see that in Australia either. It's not very common just to see flags around other than in places where flags are supposed to be.
Interestingly enough though, the places where you do see Australian patriotism the most is very similar to the ultra conservative deep South American patriotism, which is, I suppose, in some ways, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, is also somewhat associated with the redneck stereotype in a way. Is that
you are not wrong? Okay. Nope, you're not
so
wrong.
So
you're right on
in
track.
Australia, we have the same thing, except we call them bogans, and that is. I would say probably the most patriotic Australians also tend to be a little bit bogan.
A little bit bogan?
Oh, very bogan.
Very bogan.
So you've got, like, here's, okay, let me ask you this, though. How do you guys celebrate, or not even, maybe celebrate's a bad word. I don't know. How do you guys recognize, like, Army veterans for you guys? Like, do you do that at all in church?
Oh, well, we have, like, Anzac Day, Memorial Day. Those are two sort of big days in the Australia and New Zealand calendar. So, Anzac Day, really, it's about both the Australian and the New Zealand soldiers who fought together. So that's something we do across both countries, which is cool. And generally churches, like your church service will have something to do with it. It's not, some churches do it more than others, depending on if they actually have people who are more influenced by it than others.
But as far as recognizing veterans in the church, it's nowhere near as controversial, I suppose. Or I don't even know if controversial is the right word. But there's not as many hang-ups. You know, if somebody has fought in a war, we kind of go, cool, respect. But we don't sort of, I don't know, you're not going to give up your seat to somebody just because they're wearing a uniform or something like that.
Gotcha. But I just find it interesting for a denomination that has largely taken the role of pacifism and taken this kind of stance of pacifism in America, at least in my experience, we venerate, I use that word intentionally, we kind of venerate our war veterans. And it's not like I mean any disrespect to war veterans or people who fought. I just, it's a mixed message as a denomination. Mm. That's like, to me, what I've really struggled with. And it's mixed into our American identity. And so I was curious to know how much it kind of worked within your identity as Australians or as New Zealanders, you know, as Kiwis. And so that it doesn't surprise me, at least, that there's some of that everywhere. Mm. The church really doesn't know how to handle that. And I don't know either, but it is an interesting kind of conflict or controversy that is there. And it certainly is there. Like it exists. It's just not taking the forefront because women's ordination is right now. The biggest.
Yeah. I will say this about war, though, especially in Australia. When the Desmond Doss movie came out last year, they jumped on that like a fat kid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like a fat kid on a cupcake shop, right? You know, they were just like all about the Desmond Doss movie. They smashed it hard out. They produced, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of advertising and evangelistic content related, all to try and get people into the church, and I don't think it really worked.
No, it did not. I find it interesting that it was that you felt that as well. We definitely felt it here. I actually didn't see the movie out of protest because I was so sick of seeing the advertising for it everywhere. I couldn't escape it.
It's a shame because was actually a really good movie.
Yeah, we watched it for a fundraiser for our Pathfinders, and it was probably a bit too much for Pathfinders to watch. It was pretty intense. I was like, man, we've got like...
I was going to say, I hear most people talk about that movie kind of like The Passion of the Christ, where they're like, that was way bloodier than I expected.
Yeah.
It was way more violent than I thought it would be.
Who knew that a movie literally about war and killing would be so violent? I just don't get it.
That's a real shocker, is what it is. That's just completely unexpected. So let's switch gears here. I want to talk about ministry with you guys and talk about what your experience has been like as pastors. So let's kind of switch into that. Let me just do this. This really would have been a question for the beginning of the episode, but I don't care. So what made you guys decide as individuals to go into ministry as pastors?
Yeah, well, my mom's a pastor, so that probably helped the whole thing.
that has like one of two, that only goes one of two ways.
Yeah.
You either become one or you hate like the church.
Yeah, but my mom, I don't know, she was awesome. She never, it sounds weird that a pastor could even manage this, but she never really forced anything upon us. You know, from an early, in my teenage years, we were well allowed to choose whether or not we wanted to go to church. And I left for ages and came back and just fell in love with the whole thing. And I remember I went to a Hillsong conference in Australia in Sydney. And that was the first time I really saw, I wasn't really going to church that much at the time, but I went there and I saw all these people just so excited about Jesus and just generally happy to be there at church, you know, and so many people involved and using all their different talents and gifts in all different ways. And I thought, wow, like if this is what church could look like, I want to do this every day, all day for the rest of my life. Like, this is amazing. And so that for me was a huge moment. Those sort of two things were major factors. And yeah, I just said, God, you know, I'm just, whatever you put me in, I'll just say yes and do it. And now here we are in New Zealand. Yeah. Thanks, God.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. All right. And Jesse, what about you?
You know, I never wanted to be a pastor. I was always kind of the good kid. I'm the eldest of four kids. So I was kind of playing parent part of the time growing up. And everybody used to tell me, you know, I'd be such a good pastor, yada, yada, yada. And that was because I suppose I had an inch of responsibility and I worked well with kids and all that sort of stuff. And I always kind of rebelled against that because whilst I was always the good kid, I didn't like to be forced into doing things and I could be incredibly stubborn. So when I left high school, I worked for a little bit and I explored my options. I wanted to be a journalist. And then I changed from wanting to be a journalist to being a psychologist, and I never quite melded with those two ideas. I liked them, but they never quite sat well. And it was like I was being haunted by a ghost or something like that, because I could never get the idea of pastoral ministry out of my head. And it really bugged me and I really hated it. So I set a few fleeces before God, and annoyingly, he fulfilled all of them.
Oh, wow.
Which Yeah, if something is going to both irritate the heck out of you and also confirm that God is alive and actively wants to work in our lives, then definitely do something like that. But just be prepared to live with the consequences if he decides to show up. So I went to Avondale College and met this guy while we were studying. He was a year ahead of me. And went through it. And, you know, ever since then, I'll be honest, I've had my doubts about ministry, about whether I'm the right person to be in this role. But God has continually taken me to places and put me in situations that have grown me and that have not reinforced how great Jesse is, but reinforced the fact that God does want to do something in and through me. So, yeah.
And, you know, a little bit of how great Jesse is, because Jesse's pretty great.
Just a little bit.
That's what the podcast is for.
It's just the Jesse. It's an hour with Jesse. I actually really identify with that. I don't think enough people understand how hard a lot of pastors and ministry leaders are on themselves.
Oh yeah.
And because, like, not only do we typically do, and please understand, like, I'm not trying to say that we're, like, we have this victim complex, but we do largely do a thankless job. Like, the reward that we see for a lot of the interactions we have will be in heaven. So we don't get a lot of immediate payoff here. And it's not like our literal paychecks are a big payoff. So it can be very hard. And especially when you're put in churches that are not very, like, when you're starting out in ministry, which basically the three of us kind of are, we're at the very beginning of it, there's this clear path you get put on. Like, the first step for a pastor is to pastor a district. Then you move up, you become like an associate for a bigger church. And then you actually get the bigger church after your master's degree and your ordination, all that good stuff, right? And usually what ends up happening is the smaller districts that are inactive or that are tough, that are lonely and isolating, those are reserved for the lower, for us. While, you know, if you're a pastor and you've made it when you get a big church, and while I don't necessarily think that should be the case, I think it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, I think the reason that our districts aren't as active as they could be or aren't as great as they could be is because of the way that we view them.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think Josh can speak to this really succinctly, because that's Josh's literal situation right now. You've just made a transition this year from solo part, well, associate pastoring at a mid-sized church to doing that plus your current gig at Masterton.
Yeah, I'm finding it like hugely difficult being between two churches. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just you start doing something and then it doesn't quite go the way you want, because all of a sudden the next 2 weeks you're not there. And then you throw in something like annual leave or me speaking, you know, I speak at different high schools and that sort of thing, doing their weeks of worship and that kind of stuff. Throw in that sort of thing into the mix, and rather than just being like, it feels like a week impact, it actually feels like it's like a month's impact, because you're away for 1 week in both churches. So honestly, like, my other church is an hour and a half away, and sometimes it can be like me driving for an hour and a half thinking, oh man, what am I even doing right now? Like, what is this? How do we make anything happen? It's crazy.
Do you ever forget something and go, well, I guess I'm not bringing that with me? Like, one of my churches is 30 minutes away, and if I forget my keys, it's game over. I'm calling a member that lives near it, and yeah. I'm not turning around for anything.
Yes.
Like, it's the worst.
I forget my keys all the time out there, and I'm like, I'll remember about 5 minutes out of the town, like 5 minutes into the other town. So I've been driving for like an hour and 25 minutes. I'm like, well, I guess I'll just go and work at a cafe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I hate it. But, you know, it can be very, like, pastoring a district can be very, like, handcuffing. And you feel really restrained. And as a result, like, you don't feel like you're making an impact, which then reflects on, like, then makes you, it's kind of the self-perpetuating cycle of, like, I can't do anything. I'm not doing anything. And am I wasting my time? Is this really where I'm supposed to be? I don't see any change happening. Anything I try to do fails because I'm not there. It's this constant battle kind of against ourselves and against our members to help them, like, understand sometimes you just can't do everything.
Yeah, I totally resonate with that with you. to use my church as an example, Mosaic, the pastor who was here before that, he is now in a conference role, which says something about his gifting, right? He's really gifted with administration. Me, on the other hand, nah. It's the part of my job that I despise the most. But because he used to do all of that admin stuff and do it so well, my church was just like, okay, here's all the stuff that you have to do. And it's kind of assumed that I'm just going to do what the other guy did. And at the moment, honestly, I'm really, really struggling with that because it is not my gifting. It is not what I am called to do, I believe, personally, in ministry. And so at the moment, I'm trying to delegate as much as possible whilst also realizing that my church has a regular attendance of about 40 to 50 people. So there are limited people and even more limited people who are able and willing to do these things, which just have to be done. So yeah, it's an ongoing struggle for me.
Yeah. What do you think? I mean, what do you think the solution is? Do you think there is a solution to this kind of mess?
As in district sort of things, like.
Yeah, well, and this kind of struggle against ourselves too, where we struggle to find our own place and our own calling and things like that. Like, how are you guys navigating that?
Yeah. I think, I remember when I was studying ministry and one of the lecturers kept telling us, you've got to work on whatever you got to know whatever your weaknesses are and make sure you work on those weaknesses. And over time, I've come to realize, actually, that's a huge waste of time. Like, I'd rather just know what I'm really great at, like what God's gifted me to do, given me the grace to do, and play to the strength he's given me. It seems like it's easier for me. And it's easier for those around me. I'm actually really fortunate. I married a woman who is like highly, highly organized, like to the point where I don't even understand how she does it. Like, I'm so lost. Anyone who meets my wife is shocked at how clean our house is, how everything is just so in order. When my sister first came to our house and looked inside our like pantry where our food is, she just stood there for about 3 or 4 minutes just looking like, everything is in a perfect place and it makes so much sense. So I got really lucky, I guess, there because she helps me in my organization and helps me get better at that. That is something I need to work on. But I spend most of my time doing the things that I know that God's given me the gifting to do. And I feel a lot more fulfilled. I feel like I'm doing what he's called me to when I'm doing something that I'm really like, I'm a bit more wired for. Like, I love working with high schoolers. That's something it's not a part of my job because my job is between two churches.
Which is stupid, by the way, that Josh has this huge passion. Like, Josh goes to high schools and primary schools. Like, how many have you done just this year? Two or three?
I can't remember. I know at least two. I know at least two.
At least two, maybe a third. And yet it's not part of his job. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and but that's the thing. Like, I know it's a strength, so I make time and just say, "Hey, guys, I'll just tell my church I'm not going to be here for a week because I'm going to this primary school and the next one I'm going to this high school." Because it's just like I know that like God's wired me that way, so I'm going to make sure I keep doing it. And I don't know. I guess when the church sees that, hey, our pastor isn't doing this stuff very well, maybe, just maybe, God will inch that, like, give him a prod and say, maybe you should do something about it, I don't know. Like, if I let something fail because I'm not gifted in it, and even if I try to do it, it doesn't come across that well, I don't know. Like, I'm just relying on Jesus to work something out. It sounds like such a cop-out answer. But that's the thing, though. Like, that's what the church is supposed to be. It's all these people coming together. It's not one superstar and all these people gathering around the superstar. It's like we're all gathering around and just using our gifts. That's empowering, right? I don't know. That's how I think about it.
Well, and that to me, like, that's a strength of a district because the pastor isn't there. The members have to do more.
Yeah.
Especially when the pastor isn't there every single week. Like, I alternate. So on the weeks that I'm not at a church, like, they've got to take care of everything. I'm not there. And if they call me, I'm in the middle of a church service at another church. Like, they can't call me. So they've got to step up. And so I do think actually that's a strength of district pastoring just in general.
Yeah.
But See, I'm jealous of you because you're married. I'm not. So both of you are married,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Actually, my wife is very similar to Josh's wife in that my wife actually, she's trained to be a teacher, primary school teacher, but she's currently working as a PA. So that says something about her gifting as well. So in the same way that Josh's wife kicks him up the butt sometimes when it comes to organization, or maybe Danelle does it a little bit more kindly. Karina, my wife, doesn't do it as kindly sometimes, but I love her anyway because she helps me.
Let's pray that they never hear this episode.
Oh, it's okay. They don't listen to our podcast. I don't think they'll listen to yours.
Okay, good. Then we're fine.
Actually, no, that's not true. That's not true. Karina, my wife, the only time she listens to Burn the Haystack is at nighttime, and it helps her to fall asleep.
No.
I'll be doing something in this room and I'll walk into the bedroom to go to bed and she'll be fast asleep and she'll be listening to Josh and I talk and I'll be like, oh, I feel so bad about this. It does not help my ego. Yeah.
I'm going to start like towards the end of an episode just yelling like, wake up, Karina, and see if it does anything.
I kind of now want you to do that. I really...
All right.
Or like really quiet, like under all of your voices, put like some subliminal message yeah. in. That's
oh yes,
like Karina make pancakes.
We could really get some good work done with our wives. That would be
your wife.
Okay, that's true. <You're> not...
Karina make Josh's wife listen to this podcast. I love it. Love it. No, see, I'm not married, so everything I have to do is kind of navigating on my own, which is why my bed is not made behind me, which is why my life is a total mess, and I have like 6 empty cups around me, because I'm a full-on bachelor. That's not true. It's actually 5 empty cups. No? 3 empty cups. I don't feel terrible.
Bro, honestly, look, I love being organized because Karina does it, but a part of me misses that lifestyle as well. So once you're out of it, you will miss it, trust me.
I will keep that. Well, I do like the fact that I can use all of my disposable income on me. I very much enjoy that.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, my free time is mine. But that's actually, so that's one thing that I found. And I don't know how you interacting with older pastors has been impacted at all. But one of the things I found when I talk with older pastors is they see me like travel a lot. They see me have time to do 2 podcasts, 3 at one point. They see me have the time to play tennis, go mountain biking, do all these different things. They're like, man, are you even working? And I'm like, yeah, I am. And they're like, well, then how do you have the time and the money to do all this? And I'm like, because I'm not spending that time with family. I'm so sorry that your family is such a burden to you that you can't enjoy your life. Like, but they legitimately get mad and accuse me of being irresponsible because of the time that I would be spending with a family, I'm able to just spend on myself. And they accuse me of not working. They accuse me of wasting money, which in some cases I definitely have. but they accuse me of all these things. And I'm like, hold up. Like, I'm just trying to live my life and figure out what to do because I don't have a family to pour into.
Yeah.
But you guys are married, so you wouldn't have that kind of same accusation. But I'm curious, like, what has it been like getting along with older pastors and kind of colleagues?
Yeah, I think it's different. We don't have kids. I mean, I have 2 cats and that's more than enough for me, but I know it would be different if I had Amen. Kids having time for hobbies and that sort of thing. But I remember we had a meeting a while ago with a bunch of the pastors from our region, and we're the 2 youngest. All the rest are like, I think double our age probably. Around there.
Yeah.
So,
Dang.
And they did this thing where the leader asked, okay, guys, why don't we just go around the circle and say what our favorite hobby is? Like, what are the hobbies we like to do?
Instantly, Josh and I were like, uh-oh.
Yeah, and everyone, they go around and we're like, oh, I used to love playing tennis, but now I don't have the time because of ministry.
Yes, I used I'm to, so busy.
I used to love, I don't know, such golf, and such. Golf. Oh, that one came up heaps. But now, you know, just with ministry, I don't have time. And then it got to like me and Jesse and I'm like, I love playing video games. I love playing music. I love going for walks with my wife. I love going to the gym. You know what I mean? Like, I'm very particular about my time. And my mum, she's a champion, but she says it herself. She always worked crazy hours as a pastor. And she was always like to me, like, if you ever go into ministry, don't do this. Make sure you've got time for yourself. And so I've kept that to heart. I make sure I have time to do the things that, I don't know, Maybe they are a waste of time. I don't know, but they make me feel good and make me feel recharged when I go back into doing ministry. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially for millennials and Gen Zs, there's this sentiment with my parents growing up that the things that I used to be into when I was a kid, you know, I used to love Lego. I still like Lego. It's still expensive for me to do what I really want with it. But Lego,
amen,
video games, all that sort of really super nerdy stuff, which I still love. My parents always used to think, oh, he'll grow out of it. And I think there's this sentiment that it's like, a lot of these things that, you know, we're into, they're childish, or, you know, you only do them when you're a kid or a teenager.
But why hasn't he grown out of it?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, like I used to spend hours on YouTube, you know, I remember when YouTube first came out and everybody started watching these crazy viral videos and everybody was like, oh, these teenagers wasting hours. Meanwhile, you know, watching like 12-hour long cricket tests, you know, sort of thing. You know, it's just, so I think that there's a sentiment perhaps in the older generation of pastors that ministry is so important of a calling that you have to put in way above and you can't have any hobbies, you can't have any time off. And I don't know, and I don't know, this might sound offensive, but I find people who devote their entire life to ministry, who are always on the road, or they're always visiting, or they're always doing ministry stuff, I don't know, I just find that kind of boring. I'm sorry, like, people who only have that one thing, they're not multi-layered. They don't have the breadth and depth of knowledge and experience that comes with pursuing things outside of work. And that doesn't just go for ministry, right? That's like, I think I would apply that to anybody who's in a job who works a 60-hour week and doesn't have any time for anything. I just find that so uninspiring and boring.
Well, and it's, I mean, as far as ministry is concerned, it's idolatry.
Yeah.
Like in my mind, it's idolatry. It's seeing ministry as the king of this. Like there's this sentiment that you can't do ministry unless you're called. Like if you can do any other job, then you shouldn't be doing ministry. And I'm like, that's only because we've turned ministry into that.
Yeah.
Paul was a tent maker. Sorry. Like that's not a good argument for me. Mm. That ministry is supposed to be the totality of our lives. Certainly every Christian does ministry in the way they interact with people and otherwise, but it's something that's integrated into our lives. It's not something that takes over our lives. And that's, I think, the difference. And with a lot of pastors, they see us and this kind of newer generation that because of the failures of a lot of our parents who didn't have time for us, come from a lot of broken homes. Like I can't think of a single person I know that doesn't have like a lot of family issues. Mm-hmm. We're trying to navigate this for ourselves and figure out what our lives look like. And we're making sacrifices in areas that older generations haven't and have refused to traditionally. And it's seen with a lot of distrust and skepticism. Which has meant that when I show up to pastors' meetings, oftentimes a lot of older pastors won't even like look my direction. Or if they do look my direction, it's to make sure I'm playing the game right instead of to welcome me in. Mm. And I find it really interesting. You know, I taught at a high school for a year, and I remember it was the same high school I went to. And it was so interesting to me, and I'm really sorry if there's any of my former colleagues or staff members that listen to this. But I find it really interesting that like when I was sitting in staff meetings pre-week, we all walked into the meeting rooms and all the staff sat at the back. We'd get on the bus to go on a field trip and everyone went towards the back. But then when I was a student, I remember like if I walked into a room for assembly or for class, they'd be like, no, everyone needs to, you know, please move to the front. And they became like their students. They became a lot like the very people that they were trying to lead. I watched them talk and be on their cell phones the entire time. And that's something that's like forbidden in class and forbidden in assemblies. And yet during staff meetings, it was happening. And it was just really interesting dynamic to watch take shape. And when I walk into pastor's meetings, instead of we want our churches to be these welcoming communities. But then as pastors, we're not even welcoming to each other.
Yeah, that resonates so much with me, you know, but I see, what I see a lot of the time, and this breaks my heart, is a lot of these pastors who go into a church or a series of churches, and they're idealistic. They may not even be that young. You know, I'm talking about the 30, 40-year-olds, and they sit in that church for a while, and the church just kind of breaks them down and beats them up, and they're just getting by. And so what you end up with is a pastor who ends up not leading a church by being bossed and bullied around by that church. And then when you interact with them outside of that context, you go, who are you anymore? You know, you've changed because you've had to suffer through so much. And of course, not every church is, you know, a horror story. And that's you know, not saying that about every Adventist church, obviously. But I still think that there's a, it's just so tragic. And I just hate to see it, but it just happens so often. And we do it just so that everybody can be happy. We just want to make people happy. And so we end up becoming this shell and it almost end up selling ourselves out just so that everybody can get along. And that's just so sad.
Hmm. Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I found like it's interesting the difference even between, like, I went to a couple of, I mean, I was never employed in ministry when I was in Australia. I was always volunteer. But I went to a couple of the ministers' meetings over there and then went to, obviously I've been to a bunch here because I work in this conference now in New Zealand. But I found, I don't know, I found the pastors here, I think it's like maybe the Polynesian, like Pacific Island mindset. There is just no like competition between any of us. Everybody, I don't know, I remember when I first walked into my first one, they were like hugging me. And, you know, introduce me to other pastors and all that sort of thing. And it was all, I don't know, like if somebody had a win in Australia, you'd see a lot of like tall poppy syndrome kind of thing. I don't know if you guys say that same term. Maybe it's, anyway.
Nope, never heard of that in my
life.
So
that's like a poppy is a kind of flower. And if it grows tall, yeah. It's like this thing about all the other poppies want to cut it down. So we have that in Australia. We call it the tall poppy syndrome, and as well here in New Zealand. Huh. So when something does something really great, everybody just starts targeting them and cutting them down. So basically, like, I would see that a lot in Australia. And like whenever a pastor was doing something good, all these other pastors would be like, oh, look at that. Look, they're doing this wrong, this wrong, this wrong, this wrong. Whereas here, yep. I have really not found that. It's always been, if somebody's doing something great, get them up on stage, celebrate, laugh with them, sing. A lot of singing here. A lot of singing. I do see often, I have different views on ministry than the older generation of pastors, and definitely different views on like hours working and all that sort of thing. Like, because I guess the way I see it, I'm in it for the long run. I don't plan on quitting. And so it's sort of like, I want to be in ministry till I retire. Whereas some of these guys are in their 60s, they're looking retirement down the barrel sort of thing. So they're just screw it, give it all. Like, let's just 80-hour weeks, who cares? I'm only doing this for another 2-3 years anyway because that's all I've got left. So it's got to be a very different mindset. But I've found at least here, they're a lot more accommodating of me being a bit different. Even though we might see ministry a bit different, they've been good to me. But trying to, there are some conversations that I'm like, no, I don't want to talk about this because I already know what you think about it. I've heard what you think about it. I don't want to have this, you know. We see it differently. Yep. Let's not bother talking about it. We're not going to see it eye to eye. Let's just get in our own lane and run that lane and support each other as we run in our lane. I don't know. That's how I've seen it.
I see kind of a mixture, actually. When a pastor is doing well, we'll put them on stage, we'll talk about it, we'll celebrate with them. But like as their like leadership will celebrate with them, mm-hmm. like conference leadership. But as they share with other pastors will then tear them down on occasion. Like we'll look for, if a church is growing or a church plant is growing, we'll look at all the ways that we can be critical about it instead. Which can be really frustrating. Like I tend to do that too. I'm a critical person, unfortunately. So it's like in my blood, and I have to fight with myself to keep from doing it.
Yeah.
Let's, as we kind of are nearing the end of our time together, I want to really end this on a positive note. So let's talk about something good. Like, what are your favorite things about being in ministry? Like what really reminds you of like why you're doing this and gives you energy?
I think one of the things for me is being able to see people grow and develop. one of my biggest passions is in growing teams, being able to see people work well together, and also being able to lend themselves to a greater cause. I think that's something which we've somehow lost in the church world. Like, we see it when you see somebody on the street advocating for Greenpeace or AsianAid or World Vision. Even though I cringe at people who try to stop you on the street to get you to donate to stuff, I still recognize the passion that drives them, because a lot of them are volunteers. A lot of them are there because they believe in that cause, not necessarily because they're getting paid a lot of money to do it. And so in that sense, that's sort of what I want to see happen in the church. And it's something that I have seen in the church, but it's like when you get a glimpse of that, you kind of just want to go after it with everything that you've got. And because I've gotten a glimpse of that at some of the churches, one church in particular that I worked at that was just the most beautiful expression of community and of mission, I got that bug. It's like when you get the travel bug, you know, once you've got it, you've got it for life. And so for me, when I think about church and what church can be and what should be, I think about developing people's gifts and talents. I think of the ability for people to see who they are in Christ and to be able to grow into that, and not just for themselves, but to impact the people around them in a really positive way. And because I've seen that done so well, that's what I'm striving towards for myself and for my church. And we may not be there yet. We may not be there 100% ever, but I'm still going to strive towards it for myself, because once you've gotten a taste for that, once I got a taste for that, there's nothing else that I could really equate it to that's as good.
Cool. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I think for me, there's sort of two. Like, a big passion of mine the whole way through my journey with ministry and being in church has been music. I love worship music. I love leading worship in churches and doing all that sort of thing. I don't get to do it as much nowadays being a pastor, because often you're preaching and all that sort of thing. And my churches, they don't. They have a different style of music to me, I guess. A different expression of worship is a better way to say it. But, you know, whenever I get to do that, like, part of the reason I love it is because I love equipping people to do what God's called them to do. When I see a musician and actually fitting them into a puzzle, like when I run music, often the band doesn't look, it's not a very generic band. It's sort of a bit creative, because we just sort of learn to use who's around, how can we fit it together. And then when you see everybody working together and actually being like, wow, like, I'm playing a banjo in worship and it sounds really good, you know what I mean? Or like that kind of thing, or giving somebody a new tool, like a new sort of keyboard, and they start playing it like, oh, wow, and everybody's working together and everybody's worshiping. And any role, like you give somebody like, hey, why don't you design this presentation for us in the PowerPoint or whatever so it looks good, or why don't you do this? Whenever I have a chance to equip someone to do what God's called them to do, or some creative part of ministry, I absolutely like thrive on that, when I see somebody get the chance to actually tap into what God's given them and make it work. I love those moments. I love when I get to do that so much. And the other, I guess, is when, I see this a lot with teenagers, when they like, you know, when a light bulb sort of moment for them?
Yes, the Eureka moment. Yes.
I remember one of the most distinct one, I was like explaining sort of holiness recently to a couple of girls, and explaining, you know, the whole thing about the veil being torn in the temple and now that spirit lives in us. And I sort of explained it, I don't know, it was a real quick and simple explanation, but it was pretty like from the Old Testament right through to that moment, and explaining why it's significant. And I could actually see the moment when I said, now that Holy Spirit that was in there that you couldn't go into and couldn't like go behind the veil, now that is that same spirit that lives in you. And both of them were like, oh, like you could see, like it was like the How I Met Your Mother sort of like shatter moment sort of thing, you know? And it was just,
wow.
It was awesome, like, just to see. I love seeing those sort of moments when somebody gets something. That's it.
Bam.
Absolutely. Yeah, you feel like you've done.
At the risk of sounding cliche, like, all three of those are the same for me. Like, I love all of those moments, and I caught it too. Like, the beauty that takes place in community, the Eureka moment when someone gets it, and you really see that the most with youth, I think. Yeah. And And the idea of seeing someone grow and develop, like all of that is what inspires me and what motivates me. In fact, my ministry calling, like when people ask me, I think it's to equip and empower others to be the best disciples or to be all that God has called them to be. And so I'm totally with you on all of that. Mm-hmm. So thank you guys so much for coming on Absurdity. I really appreciate it and love talking about our cultural differences and then also just talking shop together and talking about ministry. Really appreciate it. You guys are welcome on any time, literally, like any time.
We can love you, bro.
Except for right after this, because we just recorded for 2 hours and I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
I need to eat dinner. So guys, thank you again. I really appreciate it. And best of luck to you guys on Burn the Haystack. Why don't you guys just take a minute and let the audience know, how can they connect with you guys? How can they find Burn the Haystack? All that good stuff.
Well, you can listen to Burn the Haystack on whatever podcatching app that you like, whether it be Google, iTunes, Stitcher, and now on Spotify. So you can listen to them. You can connect with us on Facebook at Josh and Jesse. Just look up Josh and Jesse, and that our Facebook page is right there. We use it to advertise upcoming content and all that. You can find me at Jesse Herford on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah, and you can find me at Jay Stuthers on Instagram. Oh, no, on Twitter. And then I think I'm at Captain Yoshi with
Captain
two
Yoshi.
Eyes on Instagram.
Very professional.
Yeah, I know. Nice. It's from a long time ago. I just haven't got around to changing it.
All good. All good.
If you type in, if you just type in Burn the Haystack podcast into Google, like you'll find us everywhere and even on Facebook.
Awesome. So. We don't have a website currently. One day we will, though, when we decide to get professional like you. Maybe you'll have to help us, Ryan.
I don't know. The websites are really not necessary for podcasting like that. You just need a host. Like no one looks at my website, but that's fine. I'm still going to tell everyone to look at it in the post anyways.
Well, it'll be our secret.
But for listeners, I'll include links to all their social media and everything in the description so you can easily just go and click it right then and there. But thank you guys so much for listening to Absurdity. If you want, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or any other podcatching app. If you have any comments, questions, or feedback for the show, you can find me at Ryan180Becker on Twitter or Ryan180Becker@gmail.com. And if you want to support this podcast financially, you can head over to patreon.com/absurditypodcast and you can donate financially as well. That all the money goes back into making this podcast happen. Josh and Jesse, again, thank you guys so much for being on this show. I am so excited to continue collaborating with you, and I love what you guys are doing at Burn the Haystack. And don't worry, I've promised to you my reviews will come. I'm just lazy, but they will come. So thank you guys, and be encouraged in what you guys are doing. Be affirmed in it, because it's amazing and I love it.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.